Let's get it started in here.
And the bass keeps running, running, and running, running,
and running, running, and running, running, and running, running, and running, running, and running.
Welcome to Blueprint Champ Radio, Jason Brennan and Jim Madrid. If you want to give us a call today, 855-892-9606. You can find us on Twitter at Blueprint Champ or Facebook, Blueprint Champ. And what this show is, we talk about the kind of the highlights in youth sports, what's going on. We're going to talk to an official today, a referee from the Washington Youth Soccer Association. We're going to check in with some people who write some things similar to what we talk about. John O'Sullivan wrote a book, Changing the Game. But before we get to those things, Jim, want to talk about some of the kind of the current events. And with the NFL season starting, it opened Thursday with Peyton Manning throwing 7 touchdowns and continues through this weekend. Football really America's favorite sport.
Still is. Crushing heads and banging up and everything else. But, man, Peyton Manning, 7 touchdowns hasn't happened since Joe Knapp and back in 69.
A lot of old guys.
I saw an interview on Friday morning with him on ESPN, and he was talking about that, he wasn't around, obviously, at that time. But, what a respect. And one thing I knew was that he knew who these quarterbacks were. He's got his history. This guy is something else, man. They call him superhero all over the press this last week, and what a great job.
Well, Peyton Manning, after the game, they brought it up. I think Michelle Tafoya came up, said something to him. He said, oh, yeah, out of Cal. It was so-and-so. I was impressed by that as well. One of the questions we got from Twitter was sibling rivalry and how, and let's just use Peyton Manning and Eli Manning, both very successful. Maybe they have a rivalry, but let's say somebody who's, my younger brother who has to listen to me being incredible all my life. How do you
really?
Coach?
Can I talk to your younger brother?
Maybe I'm exaggerating a bit, but that's I always think the younger sibling always has a little bit of an advantage because they were able to play against, their older brother, sister who was dominant for a long period of time. But still, there's that kind of living in the shadow aspect.
Yeah,
of
Michael
things.
Corleone.
Sure.
Same thing. There is.
I love when you go to fictional gangsters as your topic we're looking for some information.
Italian, I got to do that.
Information here.
But I got to look at the parenting too, and I think of the Manning brothers and, when the two brothers play each other and the Harbaugh brothers, last year, I guess if I'm the parents and I'm looking at the two of them and somebody in the studio this morning said, yeah, right, you've got a favorite one. I don't totally agree with that. I would just be so doggone happy that my two sons had reached that level and they were, playing at such a high level, an elite level, and the professionalism that both of those Manning brothers show. Harbaugh's, I don't know too much about the professionalism, but, gosh, these guys are competitors. And I would just be super happy, and I don't care what it would be, even if it was not at that level, whatever. You want the best for your kids. And, I got 5, for God's sake. There's no favorites. I just want them all to succeed.
You don't have a favorite?
Well, oh, no, I don't. No, are you kidding me? Jamie, Jeremy, the twins, right? Chase, he's not an athlete so much, but, man, is he doing great in his field. Again, I've always said you bring them up, give them that sense of self-esteem, level of optimism, and a good work ethic. And some good support, and that and set them loose. And some people take different directions. Do they have to be captains of the world? Not necessarily, but whatever that happiness is for them. But going back to as I coach and as I go around the country and watching games, and I see from all different sports, and I see siblings playing. It's really interesting that if they're playing each other, they're going to go at each other. But off the field, and one is there to support the other, and that's what's really cool.
Yeah, they replayed some of the highlights from last year in the Super Bowl, of course. You saw John Harbaugh kind of pull Jim in at the Super Bowl, give him an extra hug, and say, hey, look, whatever happens today, we're still brothers at the end of it. John Harbaugh's team didn't look so hot in the first game. But Talk about, you know, other big NFL story this week. Brian Urlacher came out and said players fake injuries to slow down the game. Is that not really a surprise to me, but it was surprising a little bit to see one of the all-time tough guys in the NFL be the guy to deliver it.
I think he just had kind of a brain freeze there and just said, you know, kind of what he feels, because it is true, and it just kind of was a slip of the tongue, and it came out, and he just said it like it is. Do you think that? I think that. It's obvious, you know, and I don't care what sport it's at. You can go across any sport, and you'll see that happening, you know, week in and week out. You'll see that happening, except for our basketball player for this year when his leg cracked in half.
Oh, come on.
He didn't fake that too much.
Right, from Louisville. No, but,
right, from Louisville, right.
But, I mean, I remember the Paul Pierce getting in the wheelchair and all, you know, just the drama associated with it. But Martellus Bennett, kind of a quotable NFL player from the Giants, said, "Sometimes it's like when you're in boxing, you get hit too many times, you just want to hold them up against the ropes." I don't know.
Well, you know, okay, so let's talk about the money aspect of things, okay? So you get a player that's been on the team, has semi-proven himself, you know, has done kind of well, and they renegotiate his contract and they give him X, right? And then they, at the same time, the owners are saying, well, that's all the money we have. And the next thing you know, they sign on another player for, you know, $25 million. And then they tell that player, oh, that's all the money we have in the negotiations. Owners come on and say, don't worry about money, money is no object. And then the next thing you know, they bring on another player for $75 million. And so then that player in the middle is sitting there, you know, going, okay, oh, by the way, I just had an MRI on me, but it's still sore. My ankle's still sore. He's ticked off because he's not getting that extra money, and this is his way, and that goes in a European league in soccer quite a bit. So these negotiations and owners obviously recognize that, and so somehow or another they've got to work around that. So yes, is there fake injuries? Yeah, but let's talk about the story behind it. Why is there a fake injury? Why is that person complaining? There's a backstory like you wouldn't believe.
Well, not necessarily what Brian Urlacher was talking about. He was talking about slowing down the game, but yeah, those things happen. Those things happen as well. You see that happen a lot in the NBA when guys need to take a night off with general fatigue. Those sort of things are generally mentally they're not interested in playing that night. Another thing, Brian Urlacher came out and said he's making a lot of headlines, by the way, as a analyst now. Didn't like the way Johnny Manziel performed in his win over Rice. Said, I'm not calling him a punk, but he acted like a punk in that game. We've talked about Johnny Football a couple of times.
Yeah.
One of the worst nicknames I've ever heard, by the way. It just seems like there was no effort put into that nickname at all. It's like, Johnny Football! Well, Johnny Football gets a taunting penalty. Actually, after the game, the player for Rice said he didn't taunt him and he wishes him a good year and said, nice tackle, but he just comes off with that bad body language. He acts like he doesn't care about the rules. It's going to hurt him.
He's on the cover of Time magazine this week. Did you see that? He's on the cover of Time magazine. I don't know. You know, I wish I had a little bit more background on the guy, but from all, you know, his public persona now is coming off as an arrogant, pompous, you know, entitled, you know, player again. And you know, just great for sports. You know, just another great, you know, thing for sports. And maybe he hasn't, whoever's working with him hasn't really sat down with him and said, hey, look, here's what's happening to you. And so, you know, his value, his brand and all that, should they be paid? I don't know. You know, that's back and forth all day long. But the way that he's taunting and the way his actions are, somebody needs to sit him down and talk to him and say, look, you know, this is not doing well for you or for the team. And you know, just the overall thing for sports overall. We just don't need another one like that.
Right. Talking about more football stories, Tim Tebow reportedly turns down NFL's team inquiry to play a position other than quarterback. I think the Tim Tebow story might be ending here. You might see him in an arena league coming up soon. One of those things was really good for sports, especially college sports. I wish he could have been a great NFL player. It just doesn't look like it's going to happen.
Just not going to happen for him. And you know, he's got to realize that. And, you know, I think with this guy, though, with Tebow, he's going to realize that. You know what? This guy's going to go on to be a successful person someplace else in his life. What a great role model he was, whether you were a full-on Christian or not and so on. I'd rather see somebody kneeling down and doing the sign of the cross and saying a little prayer than somebody sitting there saying, show me the money, you know, and taunting people. You know, I'll look at those kind of that body language from Tim Tebow's all day long versus the Johnny Manziel stuff.
Well, in a tweet last week, I'll remain in relentless pursuit of continuing my lifelong dream of being an NFL quarterback. It's turned down Canadian football, rugby. I'm sure arena football is going to be calling soon.
Probably.
And wish the guy luck. Unfortunately,
great guy.
You know, it just doesn't look like Tim Tebow. One of the biggest stories in professional sports the last couple of years might be coming to an end soon. When we get back, we're going to talk to John O'Sullivan. He has a book out, Changing the Game. Talks about youth sports and the communication you need to have with your student athletes.
Very important book.
Important book. When we get back, we'll talk to John O'Sullivan, Jason Brennan, Jim Madrid, Blueprint Champ Radio. Back to Blueprint Champ Radio, Jason Brennan and Jim Madrid. The phone number, if you want to give us a call today, 855-892-9606. You can also email us at blueprintchamp.com or find us at Twitter, same handle, Blueprint Champ. Jim, we talk a lot about the car ride to and from games, kind of how to correctly parent, and not, we say parent, not coach, because we want people to be parents first and coaches third or fourth or fifth, somewhere down
don't
the line.
Don't do it. Just
that's,
don't do it.
Yeah. It's really, I we've discussed it a number of times. We both coached our sons, but we prefer not to, especially when they get to a certain level. I want to bring on John O'Sullivan. He wrote the book Changing the Game. You can also find more information about John at changingthegameproject.com. He's got some different thoughts maybe or some similar on how to bring the most out of your athlete.
Good stuff.
And not do so in a way that puts them off of sports, because as we've discussed a lot of times, a lot of kids out of sports by the age of 13. So we got John on the line.
Yeah, I do. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Hey, John, how are you?
Great.
So, John, the first thing I want to talk about in your book, Changing the Game, you talk about, you know, the dropout level of sports at the age of 13, which we discuss frequently, whether it's burnout or just other activities or girls in some case, or what, you know, I mean, I think that was a loss to a lot of my friends right there. But, you know, what's the thing that you think you could, maybe parents can look at now and say, if I want to avoid that, maybe these are some of the steps I should take?
Yeah, well, I think first of all, when we think about why kids play, and these studies have been done all over the world, boys, girls, all ages. And the one I cite a lot is the University of Notre Dame study. It surveyed like 18,000 kids and gave them 10 choices. Why do you play sports? And the number one answer is to have fun. And they play because they want to be with their friends. They play because they like learning. They enjoy the excitement of competition. But they don't play to win championships. It's not a motivating factor for them. And I think sometimes as parents, we get caught up in which team's winning all its games, which coach is winning all the championships. And we forget that when we ask our kids, they tell us the first and most important thing is it's got to be fun and they got to love it.
You mean it's not to get a college scholarship, John? I thought that
you know,
was the
I think
number
as a parent,
one.
We all wish it was.
Yes. On the sideline, that's what the parents are all about, especially when they get up around that 13 and above.
Yeah, exactly. It was actually really scary. I was in New York a couple weeks ago, and I talked to a friend who had a 10-year-old daughter who was a lacrosse player. And so she decided to jump in goal, and she liked it. And all my friends, the other parents, came up to her and said, oh, my God, you're set. If your daughter sticks with this, she's getting a scholarship. And all my friend was thinking is, really, she's 10. She might not even play next year.
Exactly, and that's what the competitiveness right now in the U.S. especially. But then there's the opposite side too, where people are taking competition way too serious, and some schools are taking things out. You know, where you can't touch. You know, you play tag and you can't touch the person; you can only touch their shadow. So it goes from one end of the spectrum to the other. Where's the happy medium? Where's the happy medium? And I think, John, your book and your website, I mean, it really follows along with my philosophy also. And you and I have talked about this in the past. But, you know, in your book and in your on your program, your projects, I really love that you really focus in on, you know, how a parent can really be an added value to their son or daughter playing in competitive sports.
Yeah, well, you know, I do a lot of public speaking for schools and clubs and stuff. And usually when people call me, they say, the parents, they're the biggest problem. We need to fix the parents. And what I say is, really, we have to educate the parents. I think we've failed in this country to teach and to help parents to help their kids. And parents are just out there looking for information. And if we can provide them with, hey, here's three great ways, here's five great ways that you can help your son or help your daughter play better, then they're far more likely to listen and jump on board. And the fact is, those things are pretty easily applicable. And you tell them a couple things, they can put them into play right away, and they see a difference almost right away. And it's really amazing.
Blueprint Champ Radio, Jason Brennan, Jim Madrid. We're speaking with John O'Sullivan. Changing the Game is his book. Outlines the seven C's of a happy, high-performing mindset for your youth athlete. The one that jumps out to me and the one we talk about a lot, John, communication. What is the importance there? I mean, obviously, you know, we want parents to be speaking to their student athlete about, you know, not only what they did right and what they did wrong, but, you know, how do they feel about it? What's the overall purpose behind it? And you talk about the big picture. When you're looking at that car ride home, you know, we generally say that's a good time, and not necessarily to lecture your kid about why you didn't score or why so-and-so did, but that's a good bonding time, and that's a good you should enjoy those moments.
Well, yeah, I think first of all that the time in a car that youth sports gives you, FaceTime with your kids, is so hard to come by these days as families have both parents working and kids are doing 9 million activities. And so to take advantage of that FaceTime, even if it's 20 minutes to and from practice, but certainly on the weekend when you're going to games, I've met so many families who've taken advantage of it and said to me, if it wasn't for youth sports, I would have never got to talk to my kids. And other people who throw on a DVD or you just listen to music or sit there on the phone the whole time and don't take advantage of that time. So you're right that the time in the car is an amazing time to communicate with your kids. And then as far as the ride home, I think that's one of the times, the ride home after the game, most kids say is their worst sports memory, because you're emotional, your kids are emotional, you're tired. And when we use that time to try to teach kids, it's not really a great teachable moment.
And as a coach, I see it, you know, it coming out the next training session, next practice session, I see it the next time. And you can just see, you know, the body language that the kid has, the effort that they're putting into it. And you can almost even tell, okay, I know what they talked about on the way home. And by the way, John, I sent the article. We had a big tournament a couple of weekends ago, and I sent it out to two teams in West Coast soccer. And I got numerous responses back saying, thank you, keep this kind of stuff coming. It was amazing.
Awesome.
Yeah, thank you.
Great.
So, John, what should the conversation be for parents that are you know, they're driving home, kid struck out three times. Obviously, you want to be there to support the athlete, support your son, daughter, really first and foremost as your son or daughter. But what should the conversation look like?
Yeah, I have a friend up in Seattle. His name is Bruce Brown, and he founded this organization called Proactive Coaching. I asked him that about 10 years ago, and here's what he said. He said, the five most important words that any parent can learn is, I love watching you play. And when that becomes the thing, the first thing that you say to kids after a game is, I love watching you play. I love being out here. Cause that's what grandmas and grandpas say, and that's why kids love when grandma and grandpa comes to games. But when you say, I love watching you play, it just makes all the difference, because now kids don't think that your love for them is tied to their sports performance. Now, I've had people ask me, you know, what about when they play really well? Can we talk about it then? And what I say is, no, you really have to be consistent, because if you only talk to your kids when they play well and then when they don't do well, it's silent. Well, again, you're telling them that, hey, I'm angry at you because you didn't play well today or your team didn't win the game. So unless your son or unless your daughter brings it up and wants to talk about it, because some kids do. I was one of those kids that enjoyed that conversation after a game, the debrief in the car. But if your son or daughter isn't, then let it be. And a couple hours later, when the emotion's gone and the tiredness is gone, then just say, you know, hey, you want to talk about the game. And I think that's just a great way to manage it all the time. And you might have one child that loves to talk about it, and you might have other kids who don't. And so it's just up to you to figure that out and honor their choices.
All right. Hey, this has been John O'Sullivan. He has the book out, Changing the Game. You can find out more about John at changingthegameproject.com. Appreciate your time today, John.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, guys.
Welcome back, Blueprint Champ Radio. Jason Brennan, Jim Madrid. Jim, I want to bring on a referee from the Washington Youth Soccer Association, because we had that story a couple months ago where a referee was killed in Utah
right. Following
a game. We've seen parents react to different things. I feel like sometimes if we just talk to the source here, yeah. We might get an insight that we wouldn't get. So we have Will Nichols on the phone. Will, first of all, referee gets killed in Utah. Immediately, what were your thoughts?
Well, that's a tragedy for everyone involved. Clearly, the family of the gentleman who lost his life, first and foremost. But then everybody involved. Nobody wants to be around a game where that type of stuff happens. And that news percolates across the country, and people talk about it, people hear about it. And it's just sad for everyone who has to now be involved in those situations, because it's not just about the man losing his life. It's about those around him and the next and the next and the next. And so it really percolates into being a tragedy all around. And certainly the most upfront part of that tragedy is for those family members of the referee who lost his life now have to go on without their dad, without their husband, without their brother. Very, very sad thing for everybody.
Now, Will, after 9/11, I flew differently. After that story, did you ref differently, or did you notice, well, who was on the sideline, or did it change your outlook on your job?
And also, did you put anything else into the training program for all your referees in Washington State?
Well, Jim, the thing we've been doing with you, working with Jim Madrid, has been a wonderful complement to our referee program. He's added a lot of self-development skills, those interpersonal skills, because refereeing is one thing. It's a people business. It's a management business. It's a leadership business. You as a referee have to lead 22 players, the coaches, the fans, the spectators. It's a big job. And without training of how to be a leader, without training of the self-development stuff, you're really missing the boat. So to answer the question, what do we do after that event? Emphasize the importance of conflict resolution, the importance of de-escalating confrontation, because we have a lot of young referees and a lot of very energetic coaches, and those can be bad combinations, very bad combinations, if they're not, if the referees aren't trained to de-escalate and remove some of that conflict and confrontation.
Talking to Will Nichols, ref, program director for Washington Youth Soccer. Will, who's worse, the parents or the coaches?
Good question.
Well, everybody's in the same boat, and the referees have a piece of that. Everybody's in this together, trying to make the game better for the kids and for the players. That has to be the focus. So pointing fingers isn't going to solve problems, but getting information, getting training, and working together, that solves the problem, or at least start to address the problem.
This was the final boarding call for Alaska Airlines.
Will is at the airport in Seattle, Washington, on his way to a game to referee some games, so be patient with that.
It's a noisy place to do a radio interview, and I'm just getting on my flight to go ref my game today.
All right, one final thing for you. You talk about the conflict resolution, and a lot of times referees in the past were – a kid that maybe had played recently, paying him $9 an hour and say, go out there and ref the game. And you saw sometimes other agendas that weren't necessarily what's best for the game. What's the process of the training been to escalate the level of referees?
So we, as U.S. Soccer, have done a very good job over the years of training on the laws. What are the rules of play? What are what we call the FIFA laws of the game? Procedures, mechanics, those fundamental elements have been well trained by U.S. Soccer nationwide for many years. Where we've been working with Jim and Washington U.S. Soccer, trying to implement more development of itself. So we have three concentric circles. I think Venn diagram, is that the name of it, Jim?
Yes, seven fundamentals
and
mental toughness.
Three right. circles, art, science, and self.
Right.
And so the perfect referee development program resides in that center of those three circles, art, science, self, and the overlapping of those three domains. And that's where we've been focusing on a lot of our work with Jim and getting the self-management, the self-development piece focused on. Because, like I said, the art of refereeing, the science of refereeing have been well taught over the years by U.S. Soccer, and so we're trying to build that third domain and do a better job of self-development.
All right, that was Will Nichols, ref and program director for Washington Youth Soccer.
And frequent flyer on Alaska Airlines, yeah, I might add. So.
We'll let you get on
I'm
the plane.
I'm a big fan of Alaska. Yeah, big fan.
All right, thanks for your time today.
Thanks, Will.
Great, guys. Yeah, thank you. Bye.
Travel safe.
A lot of plugs in there for advanced sports technology and the work that Jim Madrid does as well.
We kind of cover everything. You know, we're there to help where we can. But Will's a great guy, and what he recognizes is that piece is really important for these young referees.
And that's the part that, you know, maybe we can talk about a little bit more when we get back is you know, you're dealing with guys, and a lot of times these refs are young men that maybe don't have the life experience to understand that this is just a game. This is a little bit more for them at that point. So we'll save that for when we get back. Also, when we return, Student Athlete of the Week.
Got
more Blueprint Champ Radio, Jason Brennan, Jim Madrid. Welcome back to Blueprint Champ Radio, Jason Brennan and Jim Madrid. Jim, each and every week, as you know, we feature a student athlete of the week. This week, student athlete brought to you by Next Level Sports Complex in Garden Grove. And it's a local guy, Daniel Parker, sophomore from El Toro High School. He plays for West Coast Soccer, a near 4.0 grade point average. But hey, he's only had 1 year. Maybe he gets up to 4.7, 5.0, something like that.
We're looking forward to that.
But Daniel with us today in studio. We don't get that often. Daniel, how are you?
Good. How are you guys?
So I got to tell you, what made you stand out with all the people who came to us for this week was the fact that you were ASB president and you ran on the most interesting boy in school or something along those lines.
Most interesting candidate in El Toro history.
Oh, okay.
Well, there you go.
Tell us about that.
I was basically just putting up posters about interesting facts about myself, which are all true. All true.
Give me something interesting about you.
I once taught a German Shepherd to speak Spanish.
Really?
All true.
All true.
But see, there's some Spanish-English words that are the same.
Yeah.
Right? So no.
Yeah, but it was a German Shepherd. It wasn't just a Schnauzer. It was a German Shepherd.
I get you. So West Coast Soccer, how is that going? And what West Coast Soccer had a pretty good year.
Yeah, we had a really good year. I think we had three teams win the national championship. My team just came back from winning our own West Coast Cup, which is a big success for us.
And also, we just got back from a trip to Sweden.
We went to the Gothia Cup in Sweden, and that was a big success. It was a really cool experience. The game over there is so much different, so much faster, and everyone's just so into it over there. It's really nice.
So you've already been able to travel, do some cool stuff through soccer. What got you into soccer?
I've two older brothers that are very devoted to soccer, and I just wanted to be like my older brothers, I guess, and I just fell in love with it eventually.
So a lot of times you see some of the younger brothers, they get to benefit from the fact that they grew up with somebody else. So you see Eli Manning versus Peyton Manning. I don't know which one's better, but you know, the younger, it's sometimes easier. Did you find that to be the case?
I found it was a little bit easier for me to get into the game because my brothers are pushing me harder to get into it.
And they were working them pretty bad, too. I mean, they kept on working and working and working them. So, you know, and guess who they get to practice against? The little brother. So they get to knock the ball around.
That's my point exactly, yeah. Is that you have the opportunity to practice against better players, and a lot of times you see the younger siblings kind of advance farther than maybe their older brothers or sisters in some cases did. So at El Toro High School, you playing on the varsity team this year?
Yes.
And what's the outlook for El Toro?
We were going into this year with one of the top teams to win CIF.
So Daniel, what does soccer mean to you?
Soccer to me is just, that's a tough question. Soccer to me is basically just how I like to spend my free time and what I like to do. And it's my favorite thing on earth. And
what are you getting out of it?
Getting obviously physical health, but it just helps me enjoy my time when I'm here.
Yeah. When you're out there on the field and you're getting ground on by a coach, how does that make you feel?
I used to get a lot harder on myself than I do now, but at the time it doesn't feel too good, but it's just helping me grow as a person.
And you're learning what from soccer?
How to be a good teammate and just how to work with people and teamwork.
Good. All right. Getting over. And one thing you and I had a conversation before we got on the air was about how to get through adversity and getting through some of the different challenges. And if this soccer isn't just the only thing that life's going to present you and challenges in the future, right?
Yeah.
All right. Jason?
Well, I'm impressed with, you know, you're kind of aware of some of the areas that already that you need to work on outside of soccer. How did that conversation start? Did you have trouble with it at one point?
Yeah, I had trouble with it last year. I was having a tough time, and my coach recommended I go see Jim at his company.
Oh, look at there you go.
He's
there.
Helped me a
nice
lot.
Nice plug, huh?
And there you go. He's helped me a lot.
And what specifically was bothering you?
I would just get down on myself after I'd make a bad pass, but Jim's helped me a lot get through that.
Okay.
Get over it.
Get over and get on with it. Jim's book, you can find that on Advanced Sports Technology. Thank you to Daniel Parker, the most interesting candidate at El Toro High School, the ASB president and a soccer star for West Coast Soccer. If you want your student-athlete featured, you can find us at blueprintchamp.com. More when we get back. Welcome back. Final segment, Blueprint Champ Radio. Jason Brennan and Jim Madrid with you today. 855-892-9606. If you want to give us a call. Before we go to the phones, Jim, I want to talk about the college program. We talk to a lot of recruiting sites. It's always kind of top of mind for student athletes, parents, what's going on, how to shop for the best college. Sometimes we find that it's better to let somebody else do that shopping to find the right fit. And that's what the college program is. On the phone, we have Tim Twelman. Might recognize the name from soccer, right?
Big time soccer player himself. He's got two sons that played. He's got his son Taylor is on ESPN, and a great announcer. Tim, welcome.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate you guys having me on.
So, tell us a little bit about the college program.
Well, I think the college program is not your typical recruiting company. I mean, we started off some 12 years ago helping student athletes. Help them find the right college and helping them through the college recruiting process. And then probably about a year ago, we kind of changed our way of doing business in the fact that we use this concept called living from the end, where we help the kids look at college as if they're graduating. So we want them to look back as if they're on graduation day and feel like they've made the right decision based on everything they're looking for, instead of just picking a school because they're recruiting you for the sport. You know, we want them to look at all aspects of the school so they have, just so I can say they had a great experience.
All right, talking to Tim Twelman from the college program. Tim, when you make that decision, a lot of sports, and NCAA runs a nice commercial that most people become professional in something other than athletics. It's important when you look at, the high school kid who's thinking about where to go. If he's a soccer player, if he's a tennis player, good chance none of those kids are going to be making money in the sport that they choose. Probably more important for them to look at all the other advantages college brings.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think the biggest thing to keep in mind is, the percentages are very slim to even go to college to play a sport. It's like, something just over 5% of high school athletes move on. Okay, so that's a very small percentage. And then you look at going from college to professionally, that's even smaller. So, you're really not going to college to be a professional athlete. That's really not your goal. I mean, but you're definitely going to get your education, and we want to make sure that you're picking the right school based on all aspects, especially the financial picture, because we want to make sure they come out of school and able to move on and live and not have be in a bad financial situation because they borrow too much money.
All right. Well, you can check out thecollegeprogram.com for more information. Tim Twelman is heading that up there along with his son. So check that out when you have a chance, and hopefully we can have you on again, Tim.
I really appreciate it, guys. Thanks.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks, Tim.
Take care.
All right, Jim, I want to go back to a discussion that we had a little bit earlier when we were talking about youth sports officials, because you're doing some work with the Washington State Soccer Association, kind of helping them build a curriculum for referees. Because in soccer, basketball, whatever it is, a lot of times what you see is it's like 19, 20-year-old kids that are picking up an extra cash job on the side, and they really don't understand not only their importance in the outcome of the game, but their importance in how much a student athlete or how much a child enjoys sports from that point forward. What sort of work are you doing with Washington State?
Well, you know, we're helping them really on the self-development part, like Will just said, in the self-development, controlling emotions, having goals for what they want to get out of refereeing, what refereeing means to them. Self-esteem as far as, they've got a whistle in their mouth. And maybe they get bossed around all week and by professors, coaches, bosses, whatever. Now they got a whistle. Now they can assert themselves all up and down that field. So they have to do it in the right way and the appropriate way. So we have put in, along with Will, he's a great guy, we've put in a program for them to really kind of take a look at self first and understand self first and what they're bringing onto that field during play. And we're starting with soccer referees because of my love of soccer, but we're also talking to, I'm also, as you know, a little league umpire, and my son doesn't play, but I see that too. And you've been around that enough too to understand, how they can, bad calls, but just as they, all of a sudden they start being the focal point on the ball field. That shouldn't be it. We shouldn't even be able to even see a soccer ref, an umpire, a basketball ref, what have you. They should be in the background just kind of keeping the game moving along and keeping the kids safe.
So that's you hear that a lot. And I always, there's an announcer who works for the Angels who says, I didn't care. No one ever high-fives somebody and says, I'm so glad we get to see Eric Gregg working behind the plate tonight, right? They don't care who the home plate umpire is, first base umpire. They're afterthoughts in professional baseball. It's different, though, when you're telling somebody who's 20 years old or 21 years old, we're going to give you all this responsibility.
17-year-olds, by the way.
Sure, sure. Yep. We're going to give you all this responsibility. However, we don't really – you're kind of not there. Mm-hmm. And that's probably a tricky balancing act.
You know, what I've appreciated because, coaching all these years and then when I became an umpire, Darcy says, you got to volunteer for something. I go, what, snack bar? She goes, yeah. I go, that's not me. Cleaning fields? Not me either. she umpire. I go, okay, I'll do that. And it was really interesting, especially the trainers that have been around for years. But you know what? There's this fulfilling, kind of fun, challenging way I looked at it, the perspective that I looked at it was how much fun it was. For example, when you have a full crew, and a pop fly goes out to left field. You ever seen the first base ump is at home plate? How did he get there? That was, to us, that's kind of like the cool thing to make things happen and working as a team out there. Same thing on soccer field, basketball, same thing. There's so much the intricacies that go on behind the scenes, and parents don't understand that. Some coaches don't understand that. And I had a coach last night I was having a conversation with, and he said, you know what? My kids got so caught up about the refereeing, how the game was being ref. He sent his kids and his team to referee camp and that changed their perspective.
Well, not a bad idea. Want to say special thanks today to Will Nichols. He came on from the Washington State Soccer Association. He's a ref and program director there. Also, John O'Sullivan. You can find out more information about John at changingthegame.com. New book out. For Jim Madrid, I'm Jason Brennan. This has been Blueprint of a Champ Radio. Thank you for listening. Carry on, carry on.